there's a lot of waiting being done. Something that you mentioned during the ting recording. So you make a sound and then you listen to it and what it produces. And I thought somewhere along the line in a couple of the longer songs that you have a lot of this, that there are sounds that just stay in the air for the longest time until something else happens.
Well, you said
you put it all together. So
we agree.
Thank you, Eric.
So let's ask somebody else. Dial Nits, a podcast about the Dutch band Nits. A celebration of five decades of sophisticated music from the Netherlands. Your host, Eric Facon. Christian Branschen, Olli Hartung and Henk Hofstede, 28 years after the first collaboration between these Swiss and Dutch musicians. One of the first places to full-heartedly adopt the Nits was Basel, Switzerland. The band played the famous Atlantis Club in the heart of the city. On the first night, they played to the usual crowd, the ones who were always there. That changed on the second night. Word of mouth about this band from Holland spread like wildfire.
im 1982 habe ich ein Telefon gekriegt von einem Freund, der gesagt hat, hey, ich habe gestern etwas gesehen im Atlantis, wo du unbedingt...
It must have been an evening in 1982, says Matthias Erb. At that time he was a student, a big fan of pop music and singer of local band Rondo. Later, he became a famous DJ on national radio DRS3. He got a phone call from a friend who urged him to go and see this band at the Atlantis and was blown away by the power and the freshness of the band.
I saw them live, and the other two guys from the band were also there, and that was the first time that we realized, hey, there is a band that we can all agree on. Because usually in a band there's the drummer who likes the Rolling Stones and the keyboarder likes, I don't know, Fleetwood Mac, and they can't get together. But with the Nits we had something in common which we could always relate to.
But what was it about the band?
It was simply the joy on stage and the feeling of we want to sing something to entertain you. We don't want to turn our back to you. We just want to sing right into your face. And that was incredible.
Was it a big influence on you as a band then?
Unfortunately, yes. There were times where we even looked at each other in the rehearsing room and asked ourselves, can we really do this? It sounds like the Nits. And we always had to fight this. On the other hand, it's better to try to copy the Nits than if you want to copy, Frank Zappa or something, Genesis.
You tried hard, light is dim. Wild colors shining from the walls. A dream, a big mattress on a sandy floor. Tons of felt.
Omsk was the album that really shook me to the core, we could say that, because I liked the first three albums as well, because they were really new wavy, a bit Brit poppy, very energetic songs, but not too special in a way. But when I heard Omsk for the first time, it was like a breath of fresh air. It was right into your face. It was nothing nostalgic was about that record. There was no reference to other kinds of pop music because it was very unique. It sounds in a way very experimental, but on the other hand, the songs are so refined that you feel you can't imagine how they did this record because the band themselves couldn't pin it down what it was, how it came to be such a joyful album with those melodies and those nice lyrics about art, which was completely new. I mean, who made a song about Barbara Hepworth or songs like Tons of Ink or Vermilion Pencil? It's about art. It's not about love, but it's on the other hand, it's a sort of love that is like transformed into something else. And it's really very poppy, but also very intellectual. Probably also directly from the life that they experienced, like going into a museum that's transformed into music directly.
Faces at the entrance door.
You also played one of the songs of the Nits.
Yeah, we played two songs. We played Red Tape and we played Nickel and Wood. And Nickel and Wood was a song that we didn't know. We saw them on a concert tour and they always played Nickel and Wood somewhere in the middle of the set. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to know, where do you find that song? And then someone, I think the technician, a roadie told us, Leszek was his mm-hmm. name, it's on the flip side of a single. And we said, where can we get this single? And he said, I can give it to you. And he went backstage and gave me the single. I mean, such a friendly guy.
And then you were opening act.
Then we were supporting act in 1984. I think it was in November 1984 for about seven shows in Switzerland, which was an absolute dream come true because imagine you have a band that you really love and you can be opening act for them. You know, we couldn't believe our luck. And we were very nervous when we first met them. It was the first gig was in Bern, in Bierhübeli. Mm-hmm. And then we went in and we saw them on stage. They were playing a sound check. And I remember I saw Henk for the first time, very close. And we thought, well, maybe we're just supporting act, so I don't know how they will react to us. And they were so super friendly. I mean, they were welcoming us. They asked, what do you need? Do you need someone who does the light? Do you need someone for the sound? And we thought, well, that's not normal, because usually if a supporting act, he gets, you know, treated like shit normally. But they really tried to support us. And after six shows, we were in Geneva, I think, where Henk had the idea, why don't we do some songs together at the end of the show?
Mm-hmm.
Really think so? And he said, yeah, sure. And then he said, what could we do? And he said, well, do you like the Beatles? And would you like to do, I saw her standing there. Yeah, of course, we would like to do that. And then we did a Dylan song, Lay Lady Lay, and we did a Nits song, Holiday on Ice. Great, great memories.
I met the Nits actually through my friend living in the same building, also a drummer. And he was a member of a Basel pop group called Rondo. And they were supporting act with the Nits for several concerts in this area. And that's the reason why Rob Klut, the percussionist, came to a coffee stop at our kitchen. And that's where we met and first actually exchanged some ideas about drumming and music.
Fritz Hauser, percussionist, who played on the Ting album and cooperated with Rob Klut on numerous occasions.
I think there was a human relation. It was maybe one of the first drummers that I made this kind of instant contact on a human side without being kind of maybe thinking maybe he's better than me or maybe, I don't know, this kind of competition thinking. So we were just talking about music, about lots of stuff, about eating, about, you know, all these kind of things that are essential to life. And I remember I gave him a tape of my solo recording that took actually place at that time, and he listened to it and he was quite fascinated. And then we started exchanging ideas about drumming alone, drumming in a band, drumming by all means, I mean, whatever it is connected to drumming. And he was always a very interesting partner in kind of enlightening my proper thinking.
And him as a presence within the Nits sound?
He's a driving force in many ways. His technical skills are always serving the music. He was never a drummer who would sit there and trying to get better just by itself. But he was always, he had a musical idea, or he still has, and then he develops the technique he needs to bring it to life.
How was it working with Rob then on a completely different field than what he pursues normally with the band?
He was, and he is still is, he's a very open musician. He's interested in sounds, in all kinds of explorations, musical explorations. He's a very friendly, open-minded colleague that is always ready to find solutions and not to create problems. Nits have been a phenomenon on the music scene for me ever since I met them first, probably, I think, about 45 years ago. And a very encouraging group of musicians who relentlessly produce music that goes to the heart. They're funny, they're witty, but they're never shallow. So it's kind of interesting to see that you can actually make music with a lot of humor without losing the depth of what you really want to say.
this is the spoken word thing I got to perform with the band later on. It's called Yöpöllö, and in Finnish it goes like this. Me kuljemme tietä, joka kiemurtelee ylöspäin kuin savu päämme päällä. Kunnes vihdoin nojaamme talon seinään, täällä hän kerran kirjoitti laulun Susannelle. Minä ja ystäväni Hollannista, me purjehdimme yöllä Ateenasta. Laivan penkillä me kaksi pyhiinvaeltajaa. Kunnes saavuimme saarelle, missä aasit eivät koskaan kohtaa kuolemaa. Kun yöpöllö laulaa, se sydämen murtaa. Kun yöpöllö laulaa, se sydämen murtaa. Sydämen murtaa. Ja kun menemme sisälle taloon, siellä istuu lintu vapaana kuin laulussa. Ja kun menemme ulos, se lähtee ja lentää läpi graniittiomena puiden. Ja se putoaa alas kuin kuu mereen. Kun yöpöllö laulaa, se sydämen murtaa. Kun yöpöllö laulaa, se sydämen murtaa. Sydämen murtaa. Niin kaikki katoaa.
Seppo Pietikäinen from Helsinki, Finland, journalist, photographer, lyricist. Seppo became good friends with Henk Hofstede with a shared passion for Leonard Cohen.
I met Nietzsche 1982 when they came to Finland for the first time to play here. I was assigned to take photos of the band, and I could almost immediately see and sense that these guys are intelligent, funny, open persons, and I just got the feeling that it would be nice to know these guys, and that's what happened. We've known each other now over 40 years and we are still going strong. What initially attracted me to the Nietzsche was, of course, their music, always enjoyable, and also the way they behaved on stage. They can be very humorous on stage, and I think Henk Hofstede is a great comedian, and he always has good stories to tell. My friendship with the band, and especially with Henk Hofstede, developed over the years to the point where they asked me to get on stage and do one number with the band, a spoken word thing. And that made me feel in my wildest dreams that I'm a member of a band. I also did a couple of film projects with Henk, and we got on famously together. We always had so much fun.
Me kuljemme tietä, joka kiemurtelee ylöspäin kuin savu päämme päälle. Kunnes vihdoin nojaamme talon seinään, täällä hän kerran kirjoitti laulun Susannelle.
The Nietzsche has a cult band status here in Finland. I think they never were commercially very big, but that's not their aim, of course. They like it when they have a strong fan base. They can fill up a concert hall, and they can enjoy seeing that the audience is not just older people, but more and more young people come to their concerts here in Finland.
Huoneessa istuu lintu vapaana kuin laulussa. Kun menemme ulos, se lähtee. Ja lentää läpi puiden oksien graniittiomenoita mukanaan. Ja se putoaa alas kuin kuu mereen. Kun yöpöllö laulaa, se sydämen murtaa. Kun yöpöllö laulaa, se sydämen murtaa. Kun yöpöllö laulaa, se sydämen murtaa. Sydämen murtaa.
And it's happy playing here in Finland almost every 2 years. So it's bound to happen that Finns start liking that because they see that Nits are really serious about Finland. They are not just visitors, but they are our cousins who just happen to live in Holland. I have seen Nits in concert countless times, but there is one special concert that stays in my mind. It took place at the end of 80s in Athens, Greece. They played in this ancient Roman amphitheater, open air theater up in the Lycopetus Hill. Beautiful place, really. City down there and stars above. A couple of days later, Henk and I, we went to Hydra, the island, to see Leonard Cohen's house. And I remember we were sitting in the table in Bill's bar, the bar where the local artistic community used to drink. And there was this woman, and we talked with her about this and that, and then she started telling about the concert she had seen in Athens. It was one of the best experiences she had had as a concert, and especially she liked the singer. At this point, Henk said quietly that it was me, but the woman just went on and on about the great experience, and finally Henk couldn't take it anymore. He jumped up and shouted, "It was me!" So, thanks to the Nits, we were immediately accepted to the artistic community of Hydra, and we got to meet some of Leonard Cohen's old friends there, and even got a key to his house.
England, home of the Beatles, the Kinks, the Who, home of XTC, Elvis Costello and Joe Jackson, home of pop music, a country that has mostly ignored the Nits. The question is, why? Two Nits fans from Britain, Crawford Blair, sound engineer and bass player, and Chris Evans, who has his own radio show named Curveball, where he plays interesting and seldom heard music from the world of pop and rock.
Everybody I've spoken to in Britain who discovered the band came across them through Q magazine. The writer Matt Snow reviewed In the Dutch Mountains, which I think was the first thing that they released in the UK.
I remember the review from way back then, and we thought it was going to take off.
Well, I think everyone did, didn't they? I think I've spoken to Henk on a few occasions, and I remember on one of those occasions he said they were puzzled as to why Sony never followed it up. They just stopped releasing them. Just nothing followed. And I mean, that was the richest period of the band's history, as it were. I think they released Da Da Da, which again was not one of their strongest albums. So I don't know. If they did have a strategy, I have no idea what it was.
And what about you, Crawford? How did you discover the band?
I discovered them about the year 2000. And it was only because of the internet. I had read somewhere, it was sort of like a bands that sound like XTC. And I'm a lifelong XTC fan, so I just chased that up naturally. So I was living in central London at the time, so I just wandered down to Tower Records one day, and I found two CDs in the import section, which were I'd Use Sweet Banoff and the two CD Henk and Kilo, and grabbed them. And, you know, I put on I'd Use Sweet Banoff and listened to it and kind of didn't get it at first. It took a while. It was a really slow burn. So it probably took another year or so. But I found that I kept going back to that CD in particular. I'd Use Sweet Banoff is still sort of my favorite, I think, probably for those reasons.
There is a comparison with XTC that you mentioned. Did you happen to find them on those albums?
No, I really didn't find any comparison to XTC. I could hear their anglophilic kind of tendencies in the music. Henk's voice, it reminded me a little bit of Elvis Costello, you know, like in the early days. He had a slight... And then latterly, Mike Scott from the Waterboys. But the music didn't sound really like either. But I think Elvis Costello is a good analogue in terms of career path and longevity, you know. It's like... They started at roughly the same time and they're still making music and they're still experimenting and all that. So if people do ask me about Nits, if I need to draw some sort of comparison, I'll say, well, they're sort of like arty chamber pop and they're sort of, you could compare them to like Elvis Costello, who's been going since the early 70s and still making music.
It's true, they were part of the same new wave thing, that kind of herky-jerky rhythm that they had. And that kind of wedded them to the XTC comparisons. I think that'll follow them to the graves, as it were.
Yeah.
But they did change direction very suddenly. There was such a huge difference between the music of Omsk and what came before. You know, at the time, I was kind of hoovering up the previous albums from In the Dutch Mountains. And I got as far back as Tent and Working. I didn't like them anymore. That, you know, they suddenly sounded old-fashioned. They sound like old, yeah. A bit like Talking Heads or XTC. And I mean, given what XTC kind of mutated into, this was so far removed from albums like White Music and Go To and sure. All those early ones. And the Nits were the same for me. They just took on a whole new dimensions.
That's one good comparison with XTC that you could make. That XTC evolved in a kind of fairly rapid way. But then you could draw that line back to the Beatles, obviously, as well, which may be a more sensible comparison when it comes to when we're talking about Nits. But again, with the band, as we all know and love them for, you know, they are much more than just a angular new wave pop band. There's a whole world of music that they've explored and mined, and you know, you can't really kind of contain that in just one handy little compartmentalized phrase.
But the question remains, I mean, the two of you reacted very strongly to that music. The rest of England did not. And Chris, you put it down to whatever the industry might have thought of Nits from Holland. But is there something else? Maybe people in Britain don't get the sound, or is it too European?
There is a kind of reaction in British music press in particular. They don't seem interested in melody. But when it comes to melody, they kind of tune out, and any band or solo singer whose prime selling point is melody, they ain't going to get anywhere. They've got to have the hooks and also a clear link to the past. You know, if you can say, they're clearly influenced by Bowie or something people can latch on to. And that was never the case with the Nits. They had a sound, you can hear elements of other bands and other writers in their music and other traditions, in fact. I mean, there's a lot more European music in the Nits than any British or American music I can think of. But I think that's where the British media in particular just lost touch. First of all, it wasn't easy. You know, the albums weren't released. Journalists, they don't review stuff that isn't released here. And another thing I think really worked against them badly was the name of the band.
Yeah.
Every time I say to someone, have you heard Nits? They think it's either a novelty punk band or some kind of novelty band. And of course, that I think stopped people listening to the band at all, because if they even had an opportunity, because it was never played on the radio, of course, And it was a vicious circle. It just stopped them being heard anywhere in the UK.
But still the question about the European flavour of the music, might that be a stumbling block for people?
Yeah, it's like that's the attractive part to me. I love, it's maybe like a British view of Europeanness. And that's like a kind of a sort of slightly reductionist view, I think, I have of certain European bands of being a bit arty, a bit melancholic, maybe just preoccupied with art, travel, a sense of place, family. And there's something quite attractively European about that.
Mm.
It's definitely a part of the Nits kind of thing. I mean, when you start getting into their music and looking at the record titles and listening to the lyrics and stuff, and there's all these references to artists and cities and travel. And of course, he writes very diaristically and personally about, you know, his own experiences with family and traveling and being in a band and stuff. But you don't get very much of that in British and American music. And that has definitely been attractive to me. And it's sort of, you know, the names are different. The names are slightly, it's like when you go to anywhere in Europe and it sort of looks like Britain, but slightly different. Everything's slightly different. The colors are different. The designs are different. The typefaces on signs are different. And Nits music is, for me, is kind of nicely skewed from what I was used to. You know, it's refreshingly different, but not so different that it's alienating to someone who's, you know, brought up in Britain.
I mean, I suppose I came at it from a different angle. It was that idea in the late 60s that the Beatles opened up music to every kind of influence under the sun, Indian music, electronic music. You know, it didn't have to just be three guitarists and a drummer. You can have everything in a four-minute piece of music. You know, I Am the Walrus was just inconceivable until it came out. And then you think, wow, that's possible. And I was kind of a bit disappointed by the 70s. I mean, there were new things, obviously, but so much of the world of music went backwards. It was all, you know, back to the 50s, rock and roll, and, you know, and everything had to be simplistic and back to rock and roll music.
But you could argue that, you know, in Europe, that was things were moving forward in a way that they weren't in Britain, you know, Germany.
I think that
especially.
Might be right, yeah. Germany especially, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we had our progressive rock, but that kind of petered out in about 1977, and then punk swept all out of sight. So, you know, those of us who are looking for something a little more adventurous in the 80s, and again, that was another period where things got bogged down in electronic pop music, you know, and the Nits to me were sort of way out of that. They were bringing in all these influences in the same way that the Beatles did. And at the time, I didn't know that Hank was such a colossal Beatles fan, because there was no obvious link. That, you know, when people said that bands sounded like the Beatles, they usually meant things like Oasis, and, you know, they sounded like Rain or Paperback Writer or something, yeah. Which is just one tiny aspect of what the Beatles did. You know, whereas the Beatles, their main philosophy for me, what they did for most of us, was opened us up to all this other music that was out there, and they could blend it all together again. You know? And that's never been an important part of music over here, pop music certainly.
I think it's a mindset maybe that we're talking about when we compare it, you know, like with bands like XTC or Beatles. You might find like traces of the sound back in what the Nits do, but basically it's just a frame of mind that they have.
I'd completely agree with that. That's what it was. You know, nobody was setting out to copy the Beatles, but it was the philosophy. You don't have to copy the last band who were in the charts. You don't have to sort of pursue a single path to be the toppermost of the poppermost. You know, you could just take it all on board and see what came out. You know, feed it into your own head and see what result it had when you brought out your own version of it. That line of inquiry in pop music almost died in the 80s.
I think it was a matter of finding it. It's an idea of shifting focus. In the 80s, there was a lot of music being made. So there was just a lot more music, and there was a lot more programs broadcasting music. So there was just much more to consume. But if you wanted to find, you know, sort of more underground music, you had to go and get it. But we're not really talking about underground music here. We're talking about like Nits, who are, and as you were talking about the Beatles there, Chris, I was just thinking that it's entirely true. There's no other band who really sound like Nits or have had a career like them. They've definitely, unless I'm mistaken, and there are some and I just haven't caught them yet, but they are incredibly original and ploughed a very, very original and of individualistic furrow. That makes it just all the more baffling that they haven't received any kind of attention, be it revisionist or, you know, contemporaneous.
Absolutely.
It's actually bloody annoying, really.
The Nits to me are the high bar of creating art passionately in music. I'm honored to be their friends, and I hope they keep making more music for another 40 years, if that's possible.
Kevin Hearn, multi-instrumentalist from Canadian band Bare Naked Ladies, has worked as a musical director and keyboard player for Lou Reed, collaborated with singer-songwriters such as Ron Sexsmith and Joan as Policewoman, and has played with Rob Klute.
The first song I heard was Cabins from the Hank record, and I loved how playful it was. I loved the keyboard work, the use of arpeggiators. I loved the rhythm. It just made me feel happy, you know, and I was on my very first tour in Switzerland with the band I was in at the time called The Look People, and the song Cabins just had this, you know, feeling of, the lyrics are about traveling. And so I was, you know, just out of high school and on my first tour with the band, and it just synced in with how I was feeling in my life at that time. Came to Toronto on their tour where they had just put out the Giant Normal Dwarf record, and they were playing at the Horseshoe Tavern, which is just down the street from where I live, and I knew they were very loved over there, but few people know them over here. And so the Horseshoe was, you know, it was great. I could be right at the front. And I remember hearing this song, House of the Sleeping Beauties, was particularly amazing that night. I love that whole record. That might be my favorite Nits record. And I remember I wanted to meet them, so I knew where the dressing room was. And at the end of the long, narrow dressing room, there were Hank, Rob, and Robert just sitting together, the three of them alone. In this big long room, and all I could muster was hello, and they all said hello, and that was the first time I met them. You know, I often listen to the Nits on the tour bus in the back lounge, and
I remember my drummer, Tyler Stewart, he said, have these guys ever made a bad record? You know, which is a way of saying, like, every time I hear these guys, it's great. Oh, I get excited for every record because they're always trying something new. And I guess what intrigues me lately is each record seems to get a little darker and a little more abstract and dreamlike. And I find that very intriguing and a little surprising. I know when I visited with Hank, he showed me around Amsterdam and he showed me paintings that he liked that were out in the city. And I just love that that's such a big part of their vision. And when you see their show live, the visual is a huge part of the experience. And I love that they have the team of Tom and, or the Telman brothers, I suppose. And it's just really tight. And I think it's really special. It's one of those things. Did they ever get a lot of radio play here? Were they ever exposed properly? Did they ever get the support that they deserved over here? I don't think so. And also, their music is so adventurous. It goes well beyond the parameters of what you would normally hear on the radio here in North America. And that's one of the things I love so much about them. Yeah, is it rock and roll? Or is it? No. I mean, and over here, I think there's, and I don't want to sound cynical, but you can get caught up in this game of it's got to be commercial, got to be accessible, it's got to fit the radio. What's the marketing going to be like? I love that with the Nits, it seems like none of that matters. It's all about the art and painting a picture with music. The three of them are just the perfect team. Like, they support the ideas of each other in such a beautiful way for decades. And they've grown together organically. And it's quite something. Once you open the lid of the Nits, it's like a treasure chest. It's deep.
Swiss town by the lake, fall down like a white snowflake, a fire in, a fire in.